Welcome back, everyone. I am Cass Piancy, and I am here, as usual, with my partner in crime, Bennett Tomlin. How are you today?
I am erratic and unhinged.
Yeah, in a good way, though.
How are you?
I'm good. We're recording on Thursday, January 27th, 2022. And today has been a really exciting day because a name that most people in crypto have long since forgotten and a name that we know quite well has resurfaced, and in a very big way. So let's just go ahead and start by introducing people to what we're talking about and why.
Okay. So way back in episode 7 of this podcast, we discussed a Canadian cryptocurrency exchange called Quadriga CX, in which there was a variety of wrongdoing occurring, including embezzling, people trading with the customer funds. They were insolvent for years and eventually shut down, and people lost millions of dollars. One of the partners from that exchange goes by several names, including Michael Patrin, Omar Dahani, and 0x Sifu, was outed today. In his most recent role, he's been serving as the CFO of Frog Nation and one of the multi-signature signers for the Magic Internet Money Protocol.
What is Magic Internet Money Protocol?
Magic Internet Money is a quote-unquote stablecoin that works in correspondence with the time token, and the entire system is a fork of the Olympus DAO protocol we talked a little bit about on our Ponzi episode. And so we found out today that the CFO for that protocol is the criminal scammer Michael Patrin.
Let's delve into that history a little bit, because I think our Quadriga CX episode mostly focused on Gerald Cotton, who, just to remind everyone, passed away under weird and unfortunate circumstances in India a few years ago, right as his cryptocurrency exchange imploded. Michael was the co-founder, or Omar, I don't know what we want to call him during this episode. I guess we'll just go with Michael. Michael was the co-founder of Quadriga CX, and before that, he had been super active with Gerald. That's where Gerald and him met, was on these Ponzi scheme message boards where people would try to get others into their Ponzi schemes. And so they met there, worked together from that, and then got into cryptocurrency because they were serial scammers. And lo and behold, I think Pattern claims that he washed his hands of all things Quadriga years before there were problems, right? Isn't that his claim?
I honestly don't remember what his claim is, because I remember it being pretty obvious for people who looked into it on the blockchain that Patrin was the one trading on BitMEX with all the customer funds from Quadriga. And so I put very little stock into what he says.
Yeah, but what he is associated with is one of the all-time most fascinating, because it wasn't the biggest loss in cryptocurrency history, Quadriga CX going down, but it was mind-blowing, mind-boggling. It didn't make sense, a lot of it. It was super-duper strange, all of the circumstances around everything, and he was deeply associated with that. He's a felon. It's not like we're saying untrue things about him right now. None of this is speculation in terms of his role in Quadriga, which was as co-founder, and the fact that he's a felon. He did jail time. He went to prison for tax fraud, or was it identity theft?
He ended up going to prison for larceny and grand burglary, I believe. He's also been convicted of identity theft, bank fraud, and something else, I think. But yeah, he's gotten in trouble with the law repeatedly and served prison time because of it.
After the fall of Quadriga CX and the death of his friend and co-founder, he seemed to disappear. It seemed like no one – there were rumors that he was in Thailand. There was rumors he was in Hong Kong. There were rumors he was abroad in all of these various places. But no one knew where he was exactly. No one knew how to get to him exactly. And people, including us, just kind of stopped thinking about him and those issues. So he vanished. But what happened while he was away is that DeFi became a new beast. And DeFi has, there's so many billions of dollars sloshing around in the ecosystem right now. It's hard to believe. And there was this new project. So you just mentioned Magic Internet Money. So Daniel Sesta is also like a serial entrepreneur, I guess we'll call him.
Yeah. So Daniel Sesta is the other partner and like the leader for a whole bunch of these brand new DeFi protocols. And what happened? So how everyone found out that Sifu was Patrin is that earlier today, Daniel posted a thread basically saying that someone was about to get doxxed and there's about to be all this stuff. And then Zach at ZachXBT on Twitter posted a conversation he had had with Daniel where Daniel basically said that, yeah, he knew that Sifu was Patrin. He knew what he had been involved in, but he thought that Patrin was a good guy and deserving of a second chance.
And this is where I think it's worth speculating a little bit, because the story I'm hearing to me doesn't exactly make sense based on the evidence we've seen so far. So let's just get into the weeds a little bit here. The claims being made via an article in CoinDesk and via Twitter are that he only realized who Michael Patrin was a few months ago, which nonetheless, finding that out and not sharing that information with all of the Frog Nation is a bad look. I wouldn't suggest anything illegal considering the weird realm that we're in, but it is certainly a bad look. But there is evidence surfacing that maybe he knew long before then. Will you talk about that interview and that video that surfaced?
So an account on Twitter that has the handle Best Videos of CT surfaced an interview that Danny had done back in December of 2020, where he's kind of talking about Quadriga CX and what's happened with it, how no one's quite sure if Gerald is living or dead, and people keep citing him in places. And then what he starts talking about is how he thinks that the Quadriga story is not over and that Quadriga is going to be back and there's going to be something there. Now, in isolation in 2020, that doesn't seem like much, but with him then partnering up with the co-founder of Quadriga and working on this DeFi protocol in 2021 and 2022, it begins to make his story about only knowing recently a little more suspicious.
Yep, and that becomes an even worse look. If that in fact is true, and this is all speculation, granted, we don't know. He could have, like you said, in isolation, he could have just been suggesting the Quadriga story will have crazy fallout. I mean, we've suggested as much. So it could be that he was just suggesting that as well. But there's also just a lot of reasons to put a little more suspicion on a video like that now, after all of this has come to light.
Exactly. And I think that Danny has lost a lot of the trust that he had very quickly accumulated in the community as he had launched these new products. And so things like this are probably when DeFi protocols centralize around a single personality, and where that personality by their tweets can drive a lot of the value of that protocol, or at least like the price of that protocol, that goes the other direction as well. When that person loses favor, loses trust, it can in turn become dangerous or destructive for the protocol.
I think it's worth talking about why we even stumbled into Quadriga CX, why there are weird connections with Bitfinex in all of this and Tether in all of this. And none of this suggests that, honestly, none of it suggests that Bitfinex or Tether knew anything either. But that has a whole host of issues in and of itself. So I'm going to just quickly go through why I found out about Quadriga and why I knew there were problems at Quadriga, which was in 2017, 2018, when I started getting itchy about what Tether was and started digging into it. Tether and Bitfinex's payment processor at that time was Crypto Capital Corp. And I don't know which episode it is, but if you go back
six.
Far, six, If you go back to episode 6, we talk about Crypto Capital Core. So this payment processor was a huge, huge important part for the ecosystem in general. Quadriga was collapsing because they couldn't get anything from Crypto Capital Core. And I realized this earlier than a lot of other people in the space simply because I was following the Bitfinex and Tether saga. And that's why there was an early connection between these entities and these people. But there's other connections with Magic Internet Money and Cesta, and there's a lot of transcripts floating around. Can we talk about those? They're unverified. They're kind of just out there and floating around. They're in Italian, and there's a lot of them. So
there's several interesting features here. One, let's start with before Sifu was outed, there was a blockchain analysis that showed that they were basically borrowing MIM against another token that they were getting paid in, swapping that MIM, Magic Internet Money, for Tether, transferring that Tether to Bitfinex, and then presumably selling it. And both Danny and Sufi were doing this. So this is the first thing, is that Bitfinex should have known who Sufi was because by their stated KYC AML procedures, they should have done KYC AML on that account.
And he was moving a lot of money, to be clear, right? We're not talking about a tiny bit of money here. We're not talking about $100,000.
Yeah, millions of tethers. So Bitfinex and Tether know that these tethers are coming in from these individuals. There is a set of Telegram chats that were posted by Bitfinex that appear to show a conversation between Juan Carlo De Vicini, the CFO of Bitfinex and Tether, and Danny. There is another transcript floating around where Danny appears to be asking for USDT for a war room. And there is another one I've seen in which Danny seems to talk about having access to USDT in order to support the protocol during a difficult time. There have been other people who have pointed out that some people have also pointed to the fact that when Abracadabra first launched, it launched with USDT collateral, which most DeFi protocols choose to avoid, and that Danny pretty aggressively defends Tether in public. None of that is necessarily conclusive or damning, at least not until we can independently verify the sourcing for the chats and stuff that have been posted. But there are certainly some strange connections going on here.
The strange connections have continued, and none of this, at least on surface level, on viewing, is damning. It's just weird. All of it is weird. We've known about strange connections throughout cryptocurrency and people, everyone investing in each other. And the connections run deep and they're strange. And it feels very Charlie from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It feels very Pepe da Silva a lot of the time. And I think in some sense, it's not even worth – there's connections. But like you said, these transcripts are unverified. Until there's verification about them, you just can't take them as reality. And lastly, I think it's worth, just because it's going out there, there's essentially a conspiracy going around that there was a plant that someone, doesn't matter who, that there's someone inside the DeFi system that knew how important Magic Internet Money was and how many people were involved and knew what was going to go down, and that's why it was mentioned by Congress during their congressional hearing. The beauty of conspiracy theories is it's almost impossible to disprove them. But let's just weigh in on that. Let's just discuss it. It's a weird subject. So let's just discuss it really quick.
It was definitely strange when Senator Warren brought up Magic Internet Money in the stablecoin hearing. It was not the largest algorithmic stablecoin. It is not the most commonly used algorithmic stablecoin. It is, because of that, it seemed strange. But then it became clear that Patrin had been very sloppy in his OPSEC and had funded his Sifu wallet with a known Patrin wallet. This is something that the software the feds use, like Chain Analysis, would have almost certainly flagged. And so it is possible that they were aware that Sifu was Patrin before the people using the protocol did. And I think the fact that a known Patrin wallet funded Sifu's wallet means it's possible that there were other people in DeFi who might have known about this.
I'll tell you what it says. It speaks to the level of due diligence going on in the space in general. It speaks to the speed at which money flows into projects that people know nothing about. Harkens back huge echoes to Theranos to me with a lot of these projects where people just desperately wanted her to accept their money. They were so afraid to ask questions or to even bother to look in to her company, with the thought being that if we don't get in now, we'll never get in time and we're going to lose so much money. And it happens, right? We call it FOMO, fear of missing out. It just gets the word just gets tossed around like it doesn't mean anything. But when stuff like this can go undetected and it's such a huge red flag, it says it all to me. It just says it all. It says scammers are going to be scamming hard right now. If Michael Patrin can get away with this in broad daylight, there's smarter people who are scamming better than him out there.
How many other non-devs woke up this morning, saw that, and went, oh, shit, I better double check and make sure I never made a mistake like funding my wallet with the old one? Because I guarantee you, previous crypto scammers who were doxxed have since gone anon and are still working on projects.
And let's not give the VCs a blank check on that one either. They rug pull all the time. They are rug pulling you every day, just like Anon, except they do it legally. That's the difference. When the Anon is Michael Patrin, you've got yourself a bit of an issue there, especially when he's been associated with so much loss of funds and loss of money.
This was so brazen and so out in the open. And it feels like many projects are at that point right now. And it reminds me a bit of like projects launching in March of 2018, right? Like the bottom's already fallen out on Bitcoin in the market, but there's still occasional like weird alt pops. And then you see just the people taking advantage of that last bit of the market were like a lot of the worst projects you can think of, like things that never needed to exist. And this feels kind of similar. When the tide goes out, often a lot of stuff starts to get exposed.
A lot of nudists at the beach these days.
For some reason, though, no one's saying it.
But it's been a fun day, and hopefully we didn't speculate too much. There's been some very interesting stuff going on, and it's worth diving into. There's a ton of good threads out there. I wish we could link to all of them. Like Bennett said, Zach XBT did a thread. Nicola Borzi, the Italian reporter, did an excellent thread. There's videos. There's screenshots. There's commentary. There's a lot going on. And it's by the time we even get this out, there's probably going to be a whole new story coming out. So it's worth taking the time to read about it. There's a lot going on.
Stay safe out there, folks. If you enjoyed this episode or any of our other episodes, one of the most helpful things you can do is leave a rating, a review, or share this episode with a friend you think would enjoy it. We truly appreciate your support. Thank you.